Thank you very much for joining us here on another edition of The Voice of Job Seekers. This is Mark, and you can find the show notes at thevoiceofjobseekers.com. Of course, I have another guest, and we're doing a blab. Jeff Altman is a headhunter, has been for many years. His show is Job Search Radio, and I recommend you listening to it because there's so many practical strategies, as I have passed on other people like Chris Russell and Dave Von Goddard were all after the same thing. Ryan Roten is to make sure that job seekers have the best information as possible. So we're calling this one, Why Does Your Interview Skills Suck? And a great guy that has a lot of experience, Jeff Altman. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fabulous.
All right. I love it. And again, you can go to iTunes and download his podcast. I'll be sure to supply the link on the show notes so that you can go to his blog where there's many videos and his podcasts and lots of information, ebooks, resources, just a plethora of resources for job seekers everywhere. So as part of this discussion, I just want to be sure that we understand here, we're not saying that all of your skills suck. We just know that when it comes to the moment of truth, a lot of people just don't connect with the interviewer, which we can almost say that is probably should be 101 by now, don't you think, Jeff?
It's beyond 101. Yeah. Now, the basic thing job hunters miss on is they miss the point that the skills needed to find a job are different than the skills needed to do a job. Mm-hmm. So they think they can just walk into an interview and regurgitate a bunch of stuff and have everyone fall in love with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it doesn't work that way. And I think it's interesting that a lot of older job seekers don't use some of the life experiences that they've had to connect with people. I mean, you would think, being that we're in the over 50 club, that one of the basic things is that we need to really connect with the person as much as, if not more important than answering the questions.
I think with older workers, it goes to an extra level as well. Mm-hmm. And that is, they've bought the bull that just because they're over 50, or in my case, over 60, mm-hmm. that, you know, that immediately they're going to be discriminated against.
Yeah.
So the result winds up being that they do nothing to prepare. They do no advance work. And they go into an interview and, you know, when they don't get the job, they blame it on their age, when it's the lack of preparedness that's really the cause.
Yeah.
And as I know you know, and I'm sure many of your other guests have said before, you know, you have to get ready for the interview. You know, there's work that you need to do in order to execute your plan. And, you know, when folks don't do it, you know, they'd rather blame others than themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a session, a coaching session where interviewing's involved and you're trying to tackle the topic, our tendency might be to, as coach, to kind of help them to understand, ease them along. Pretty much we can be pretty blunt if we're over 50, somebody addressing somebody who's over 50, but somebody who's a little bit younger, we kind of coddle them a little bit more because we give them a little bit more credit. But do you feel like sometimes in your coaching experience that the 50-year-old, 50-plus will act more like a child just coming out of college and they don't know what to do?
It's worse because they know better.
Yeah.
And they've gotten lazy and they're at the point in their career where they go, I don't have to do this. I can just walk in and wing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know any professional athletes who walk in and wing it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Neither- these folks are making millions of dollars a year. And those are the guys who sit on the bench.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So the talent understands that talent isn't enough. Mm-hmm. That you have to practice so that the talent can really show itself,
yeah.
And that you can execute at the drop of a hat. So for the older worker, they get fat, dumb, and happy.
Yeah, yeah. And mixed with the fact that they get advanced degrees, when they're older, that mm-hmm. kind of, that can either be a fuel for excitement, and I've seen where, you know, they're reinvigorated as they start to, now they start to research a little bit more because they're fresh out of school. And then there's other ones that kind of say, hey, this is just something else in my arsenal. Not only do I have the bat gun, I have the bat rope, and I have all else. And there's a false sense of security. So in your estimation, in your experience, how do you address that?
You know, I'll speak for myself and just say that, you know, I'm a guy who's done coach training. Mm-hmm. And I know how inspiring going back for a degree or training can be. You know, I went for a master's in my 40s. Mm-hmm. And now the coaching work that I do and mm-hmm. the training there. And when I talk to job hunters, I have that experience of being excited again mm-hmm. after years of feeling like this has gotten to be mundane. Yeah. The biggest issue in converting the education experience is often the people who are teaching you don't have the experience of transitioning this knowledge into the world of work. Mm-hmm. So they fill people with a bunch of platitudes and expectations that are completely unreasonable because you still got the resume behind you. An employer needs to get educated as to, okay, I'm beyond the resume. Mm-hmm. And no selling is going on. No motivation is going on. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there to convince anyone that just because I got my master's or just because I got my PhD, I've exceeded being a developer yeah. or I've exceeded being an engineer.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's work that has to get done by anyone getting that advanced degree later on in life mm-hmm. in order to demonstrate that you're beyond the average. So,
okay. Well, let's ride on that a little bit. What are some other mistakes that the 50 and over job seekers tend to make in their interviewing during the interview process and preparing for an interview other than not preparing?
So there's bad preparation and then there's great preparation. Mm-hmm. So let me just simply say that the standard interview that most people get ready for is the one that starts off with, tell me about yourself.
Sure.
And you do. Mm-hmm. And you go back and forth with interview karate a few times. You know, they throw a punch, you throw up a block, mm-hmm. and on and on and on. Until eventually they say, so do you have any questions for us? You say, tell me about the job. And they do. And you go, sounds great. And they say, we'll get back to you. And that's mm-hmm. a typical interview.
Right.
Now, here's a better approach. Instead of waiting for them to throw the first question out, mm-hmm. whether it's a phone interview or an in-person interview, what I tell people to do is start off the conversation by saying, hey, thank you so much for making the call. Now, I spoke with Mark about the position, and he gave me a brief description, but I wanted to get your take on it. Could you tell me about the job as you see it and what I can do to help? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that gets you told about the job. They'll tell you about the position right off the bat at the beginning of the interview when you can use that information to your advantage.
Sure. And you can also use that time to connect with the interviewer because most people don't take control or don't assume some control at the beginning. They're expecting to be interrogated, which, again, is definitely a wrong mindset.
You bet. And just by asking that question, you've instantly leveled the playing field from superior subordinate to two people having a conversation. And like someone who's a salesperson, you know, who goes out on a sales call, they don't mm-hmm. walk in and go, oh, let me tell you everything about our product or service can do. Now they ask, you know, consultative questions. Mm-hmm. You know, what sort of problem do you have? You know, so that this way they can address it in the context of what the customer needs instead of just, you know, taking out their briefcase, opening it up and going, oh, you look like someone who could use pens.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say it time and time again, people who listen to the show, the whole idea of an interview is to have a conversation. It's mm-hmm. not the Spanish Inquisition by any means. So, you know, in building a conversation, in maybe one other tip where people can kind of feel like they can assume some control or there's a partnership going on in the conversation for the interview so that they can be seen in that position rather than feel like they're auditioning for a play.
So right off the bat, that question does a good job, because at the beginning of the interview, you're getting the data that you need to talk about what you've done that matters to them instead of talk about what you've done. And those are two different levels of relationship. You know, in the former case, it's two peers having a conversation versus the other one, you're opening yourself up to the Inquisition. So, you know, just sit back and enjoy the ride, because from their standpoint, once you know what they're looking for and you talk about what you've done that matters to them, you're going to get their curiosity going. And that's really what you want to be doing. You don't want to go through the Inquisition where they're sitting back and going, okay, let's now talk about the bottom of page four of your resume, where you say that in 1984 you did, you know, you're going to engage the audience. And that's really what you want to be doing. You know, your job is to recognize that, you know, you're on the stage and it's opening night. And even though you may have been asked these same questions over and over again on different interviews, for the audience, it's fresh. Now, I remember seeing the play Cats when it was on Broadway. And although I hated the play, you kind of imagine what it was like for the cast every night to sing the song, you know, Memories. And, you know, every night, eight performances a week, they've got to deliver those lines and make it seem fresh. And job hunters don't do that. You know, they sit there bored all the time because they're being asked the same stuff. And you've got an audience that's paid premium money to sit there and wait for your performance, and they really want to like it.
Well, you inferred to something that was really important. Even though you want to have a conversation, there's also a presentation going on. There is. And there have been surveys and studies, and you've seen them, where really that's where people kind of fall short in that they're understanding they're not presenting themselves. They're not, there's not, because of the lack of research and connection, the presentation often falls short. What parts of the presentation just seems to work really well, especially for the older job seeker, who really a lot of their people come in and a lot of their younger peers come in and they present real well and that their heart and minds are all set to go. Instead, they kind of fall short on the aspect of you know, that they've got – it doesn't have to be a PowerPoint presentation, though that's not a bad idea. But where can they go right in presenting themselves?
Number one is with energy. You know, the audience that is interviewing you, that's really what's going on. I refer to it as theater, the theater of interviewing. Well, you have to understand that the audience has to be engaged, because otherwise they're sitting there and they're thinking about lunch. They're thinking about that task they left to talk to you, and they become distracted. In other words, they mentally channel surf. So you've got to keep them engaged. And for the older worker in particular, they've gotten lazy and they've forgotten the fact that they've got to sell themselves. And, you know, as soon as they see someone 30 sitting in front of them, they go, oh, damn. I'm not getting this job. Instead of redoubling their efforts. So what works is energy. What works is passion. And the, you know, the underlying question invariably for the older worker being interviewed by the younger one is, can this old guy take direction from me? Or is he just going to be my father telling me what to do? My mother who's nagging me all the time and that sort of stuff. So you got to recognize, you know, that dynamic, because, you know, you've got your story about this and he or she has their story about it. So you got to co-opt it and just basically say, hey, look, I've been a good number two for an organization now for the last 5 years. And right off the bat, you're saying I take direction.
Sure. But I think, too, is that if people use social media effectively and that they're pointing a lot of their profiles and their content, if they're producing content, still a lot of job seekers don't see the advantage of using pointing to their profiles and helping them put their work out there kind of takes away a lot of the guesswork for the interviewer, and the fact that, to say that you've seen my interviews, you've seen my work, you've seen my presentation on SlideShare. Then the discussion kind of, the paradigm kind of changes from kind of figuring out who you are to actually talking about the work, which is where the sweet spot is for everyone.
You betcha. So, I'm a big advocate for social.
Yeah.
I'm a guy who, has more than 1,500 YouTube videos and, eight books and 13 guides. And, I write for recruiter.com and for LinkedIn. And, I've got 3 podcasts. And, it all comes through my LinkedIn profile. It all comes through my website. Mm-hmm. So that when people learn about me, they have a way to say, hey, this guy isn't a typical headhunter, or this is quite an unusual coach, in terms of content production. And they learn about me and they learn to trust me because of those experiences. Mm-hmm. For a job hunter, they have the opportunity to brand themselves as a distinct expert. And not using social is a huge miss, because the impact of that is you're just another slob sitting in the chair to the interviewer.
Yeah.
And you've got to prove yourself that much more versus, let's say I come in to meet with someone, I'm wearing my headhunter hat that day. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, they've discovered a lot about me and they believe that I can solve their problem. It's obviously up to me to actually do it. Mm-hmm. But for the job hunter, isn't it better to be advantaged walking in the door than just being another person that they're evaluating?
Not only that, but you can say even near the end of the interview, hey, have you seen my YouTube channel, LinkedIn, blog, my personal website? You should go see it, so that you're sticking out even after the interview. You're being memorable. And I think people, the first reaction usually is, well, I don't want to have to do all that. Well, where do you want to do all that? I mean,
sorry. Got to be a grown up here and take your medicine.
Yeah.
So being a grown up in this market, being an adult, being a winner in this market is advantaging yourself and creating that predisposition to you and your experiences. Mm-hmm. So even in the course of the conversation, you can be more graceful, when a question comes up. And say something like, I did a piece in my blog around those lines where I spoke to that very issue. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they hear I did an article for the blog, and they're curious now to read the whole thing. And once they get to the site, they go exploring and they suddenly get a much bigger sense of what you and your expertise is like.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it doesn't work for an administrative assistant to do that.
No.
But that admin obviously shouldn't point them to the Instagram channel where he or she is in one provocative version of behavior versus another.
Right.
But there's just so many opportunities for individuals these days that didn't exist when I started recruiting to really stand out from the pack, which is what you want to always be doing.
Yeah. Definitely standing out and being memorable are two things you want to leave the interviewer with, something to keep their curiosity even after the interview. And instead of just trying to leave it all on the table, you should have a story that has a continuing saga. That's the way I think most of the successful people we interview, that's how it works out. So that they're checking you out even after you leave and not just when you're there.
You betcha. And there's one other thing that I think always creates a great impression on the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And that is making it clear to the interviewer that you're not just trying to do adequate work, that you want to be a high performer. So in that standard interview example that I gave, when you're given the time to ask questions, most people ask about the job at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But in the model that I gave, that's done at the beginning of the interview.
Right.
So you can't start off the back end that way.
Right.
So I have the idea that the first question you want to ask is, so let's say they hire me and it's a year from now. Mm-hmm. And I haven't just done a good job. I've done a spectacular job, amongst the best that you've ever seen in a role like this.
Mm-hmm.
what would I have accomplished during that year that would cause you to think that way? Ah,
and that's a great question, and getting some really good, really set a really good foundation for the relationship and expectations for you, so you know what, how to walk in.
And you also get some great information, because I do remember an episode years ago where a client of mine called me up out of the blue and said, I made a terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. What happened? And basically they found they stepped into a situation where they were asked to take over a project because the previous manager had left. Mm-hmm. And that guy had spent 80% of the money and done 20% of the work. Mm-hmm. Had he known that beforehand, he never would have taken this job, because right. he was basically hired to take the fall.
Right. All right. Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's something to be said about intuition. When you hear some clues that need to prompt you to ask additional questions, you need to be ready. Research is going to cover so much, but you also got to cover your, you got to have your gut instincts to kind of cover the other part too, and trust them. Trust your instincts to ask those questions, because there, I'm sure there are clues that were throughout the interview that had said, so well, why this person's pushing so hard on expectations? Well, they looked at the budget and seen that the budget's a shortfall for the next person. So you could have found that out in your interview. But, you know, you shouldn't shit on all over people, as has been said to me. And I believe that's the truth. Jeff, are there any tips that you want to leave people with as we come to a close here?
Biggest thing I always tell people that they don't do, that they need to do, is practice. And when most people practice, they only practice in their heads.
Yeah.
The words have to actually come out of your mouth. Now, if folks visit my website, you know, thebiggamehunter.us, mm-hmm. go to the blog. I've got hundreds of videos with some of the tough interview questions, plus the brain teasers that some firms still insist on asking. Mm-hmm. So you can hear my answers to it. But more importantly, when you hear the question, just stop the recording for a minute and give your version of the answer and how you tell it. So you have to just practice hearing your answers. So this way you can go, oh, man, that was awful. Yeah. And if you think all of them are good coming out of the gate, you're not paying attention. Trust me, I've interviewed so many people, and answers to tough interview questions, most people do not do a good job of.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt to record yourself. You've got a voice recorder on your phone more than likely. Use that, then go back and listen to your answer and be objective as possible. Even have somebody who you know that does some hiring, even if they have some experience, maybe not extensive experience, they can tell you how you come across. And I think that will be great big help.
Absolutely. You know, again, that practice with someone. Now, if you're too embarrassed to practice with someone else, you settle for doing it by yourself. But the ideal is to practice with someone else, especially if you're in a what I'll call a technical discipline, accounting, mm-hmm. engineering, IT, where you have the opportunity to partner up with someone who knows the technical subject matter and can critique how well and how crisply you answer those types of questions. It will go a long way toward helping you execute when you actually get to the interview.
Sure, sure. Jeff, where can people find you if they want to know more about you and your resources and maybe even interact with you?
So first of all, I'll say I'm launching a new site in the next couple of weeks called jobsearchcoachinghq.com.
Okay.
It is going to be a fabulous resource for job hunters with tons of content plus access to coaching from me so I can help you streamline the process. Mm-hmm. Now, in the meantime, you visit my website, which, as I mentioned before, is thebiggamehunter.us. Mm-hmm. And again, a ton of content there. And finally, if you would like to connect with me on LinkedIn, my address is linkedin.com/IN/TheBigGameHunter.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much, Jim, for joining us.
And Jeff! Come on, Jeff!
Yeah. Did I just, where did that come from? I don't know. I know you.
I know you do. But the audience may not, so I wanted to make sure.
Jeff Altman. Thank you so much for being the voice of job seekers. And for the rest of you listening in audio land, we are concluding the show right here. If you want to give me a call, call me at 708-365-9822. I'll also accept texts there if you have any questions. In the meantime, have a great week and look forward to seeing you next week.